From the sky, I could see man's harvest of destruction. Flying into Madagascar, I looked down on vast tracts of naked planet that were once thick with trees. 9/10 of the original forest cover on this island, one of the world's most precious Edens, have been lost to human rapaciousness. My bus bumped along the road from a modest airport towards the capital, Antananarivo, which means City of the Thousand, supposedly because 1,000 warriors once protected it. We wound through streets that long ago became chokingly inadequate for the teeming traffic, on wheels and feet, that ebbs and flows through a narrow corridor of shopfronts and market stalls. Everyone has something to sell. We crawled behind motorcyclists and minibuses, pedestrians balancing giant bags or cardboard boxes on their heads, and ancient taxis whose drivers are known to carry petrol inside plastic water bottles, and to glide downhill with the engine off to save every drop. We were on a hillside, and occasionally a gap appeared through which we could look down into the basin and see farmers wading through lush paddy fields. On the horizon loomed a gigantic and unattractive hotel. It was built by the Chinese, we were told, to be ready for an African Union summit. But when Madagascar experienced a bloody coup earlier this year, the summit was cancelled and the hotel became a monstrous white elephant. I can't remember seeing a city that is such a wild architectural hybrid. Through the bus window I surveyed stalls and shacks that could be in India, cramped concrete shebeens that could be in a South African township, two-story townhouses and winding cobbled streets that could be in Europe, and gleaming corporate buildings for the likes of Coca-Cola and Orange that could be anywhere. All are jammed together, without rhyme or reason. The old houses are particularly striking. Their roofs have curved red-brown slates on a sharply sloping wooden frame, often with window turrets. Many have ornate wrought-iron balconies and wood shutters. It's like glimpsing medieval London, or maybe Amsterdam, but now there's a layer of grime and nagging sense of decay. I noticed one shop where hunks of meat and strings of sausages hung in the window, while big sacks of grain sat on the floor. Above were square windows with lopsided shutters. I wouldn't have been surprised to see Sir John Falstaff leaning out to empty a bucket on the street below. The French colonial legacy is palpable too. The language is widely spoken, in the city at least. The white typeface on deep blue street signs evokes Paris. We saw a group of young men playing pétanque, throwing metallic balls at a target ball on a dirt surface. We drove on past churches, electronics shops, hotels, karaoke bars, massage parlours, pharmacies, familiar names such as Black & Decker and Toyota, and a newly restored Grand Railway Station. Below spaghetti-like electricity cables, street traders presided over stalls of fruit and vegetables, or clothes and shoes, or had pegged the day's newspapers to a clothesline to attract a small crowd. We crossed a bridge between the rubbish-strewn banks of a creek. A solemn column of people, many of them mothers with children, were embarked on what looked like a long walk home along a railway line. A hungry dog was burying its head in a rubbish skip. Women were queuing with jerry cans to collect water. Children in dirty clothes played in the dust. Madagascar, the world's fourth biggest island, is 300 miles east of mainland Africa. But Indonesian sailors were the first to land there, and the centuries of Asian influence are written in the people's faces. Culturally, it is said, Madagascar has an Asian sense of reserve, respect, and orderliness. Yet it was only 7 months ago that political violence left more than 100 people dead. The president, Marc Ravalomanana, was ousted by his rival, Andre Rajoelina, the mayor of Antananarivo and a former DJ, with the backing of the army. The country has since been mired in political stalemate, which has seen environmental gains go into reverse. That evening, I went to a drinks reception at a big colonial-style mansion in a walled compound. Waiters in immaculate white delivered plates of canapés, including caviar, on a veranda overlooking palm plants and a manicured lawn, where the evening air was heavy with the sound of chirping crickets. Among the guests were representatives of non-government organisations and foreign diplomats, including a British official, although the country shut down its embassy here several years ago due to lack of funds. Only a handful of intrepid British tourists make it this far each year. I asked what it was like to be here during the coup, which saw widespread destruction and looting. "Frightening," one woman said. "There was a mob on the rampage, and no police or army to intervene. Anything could have happened." Someone else chipped in. "I don't really know. I was in the pub." Another said, "Everything moves slowly here. Even the coup took 3 months." As the conversation flowed over beer and wine, it was asserted that Ravalomanana, the former president, was backed by America, whereas the new president, Rajoelina, is sponsored by France. Apparently, the French were upset at Ravalomanana for failing to support its business interests and, perhaps, for making English the country's third official language. Ravalomanana also overplayed his hand by planning to lease huge tracts of land to Daewoo, effectively turning much of Madagascar into a breadbasket to feed South Korea instead of its own hungry people. With Chinese interests here also growing, the talk inevitably turned to land grabbing. I thought about past empires and colonial great games. But just when it was all sounding too familiar, I met a lady who has trouble with her cat. "It preys on the chameleon in my garden," she said. "I put a bell around its neck, which warns the birds, but the chameleons are too slow. I tell you, that cat is a killer."